You're a SaaS founder. You've built something solid, but growth still feels harder than it should. Most SaaS companies don't fail because of bad tech. They fail because they've never become a must-have to the right customer. This podcast is here to change that. I'm Ton Dobbe, and this is the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. Every week, I talk to founders in the trenches, facing friction, making bold moves, and building companies that last. We dig into real choices around focus, positioning, customer pool, team alignment, the things that separate forgettable software from the ones that people can't live without. No hype, no hacks, just honest conversations to help you build something that people would miss if it was gone. If your SaaS should be indispensable but isn't yet, this is your podcast. Let's get into it. The guest of our podcast this week is David Bagdasarjan, CEO of Crisp AI.
To understand the pain, you need to understand the alternative, right? So in case of like noise cancellation, the alternative, like if you are in an office, the alternative is to go to find a quiet room, right? So it's like probably not that painful. If it's a call center, there are like a lot of people speaking next to you. That's probably like just there is no alternative.
This is David. We dig into how we turn personal frustration into breakthrough voice technology that now processes over 1 billion minutes monthly. You'll hear how choosing problems with no alternatives created unbeatable product market fit, and why their marketing experiment accidentally became infrastructure powering a new category of human-to-AI communication. We'll explore the counterintuitive truth about building from real pain and what happens when you focus on essence over speed. Well, hi, David. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Hey, Tom. Like, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, it's the same for me. And we already talked before. It's been a while since I have people on my podcast that were in the voice industry. And I've got some interesting connections in that space, or at least I've been working on something in the past that was connected to this. And I know how hard it is. And how much potential there is if you get with solutions that are available these days through AI. I also, once I saw that what you were doing with the voice space, I immediately also understood your name, the name of the company, Crisp, because that's essential to have when it comes to voice.
Yeah. I'm so proud of being able to find that name.
Exactly.
Before that, I thought I'm not good at names. But that changed my perspective. So super proud of that. Exactly. The name of the company.
Yeah, it just gives a lot of meaning to it as well. And likely it's also part of your vision there. But before we start talking about your company, Crisp, what drives you? What gives you energy as an entrepreneur?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think it's the, I'm very curious about technology. And I think technology just creates a lot of energy for me, right? Like building difficult technology, right? I feel energized to build deep tech products and understanding like the details and actually building and then like seeing it realized, right? Working in real life, it's just like creates so much energy for me and that keeps me going. Yeah, I think that would be the case.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it's a topic that is, well, immediately kind of hitting a nerve with me because it's trait number four in my book, Remarkable Software Companies Mastery, the Art of Curiosity. But to make the bridge to the company, to Crisp, you started that with a couple of other co-founders in 2017, I saw. What was the problem that you saw back then whereby you said, hey, there's no solution, there needs to be a solution? Apparently, it was very hard to create a solution. Why did you decide to jump on that and just solve that?
Yeah, I mean, the problem was twofold, right? So I was working at Twilio, which is a large communication platform.
Yeah.
And I think like by nature, like wherever I worked in my career, I was always curious about understanding the business and also understanding new use cases, technologies. And for some reason, I don't actually remember why, but for some reason, I started being curious about like why AI back then. That was like 2007, like 16 actually. Why AI back then? It wasn't AI. It was like machine learning. So why machine learning is not being applied to noise can the problem of noise cancellation, right? Because the state of art back then in noise cancellation would require multiple microphones. Like, so one of the microphones would need to be close to your mouth. The rest of the microphones would need to be as far as possible so that you sort of understand what's the primary signal and then subtract the rest of it. But the machine learning could give you software solution, like only like that would require like single mic, right? Single microphone. Anyway, I mean, that was like, I was curious about it, but I think like I was curious about it because I was working at Twilio and every summer I would go to my home, to Armenia, where I'm originally from. Yeah. And when you're in Armenia in the summer, like in its evening time and it's like morning time in San Francisco, you don't want to stay at home in the evening, during the evening, right? So, but I had to connect to my like early calls with my team, and I couldn't do it from home because I was outside. So I wanted to have privacy. I wanted the button that I would click and all the background noise would disappear. So so the need was like really personal for me, right? A bit like selfish need. And I shared this idea with my to-be co-founder, Arturo, and like he got really interested in the idea because like he holds a PhD in math in digital signal processing. So he found it to be like very interesting. So we started working on it in the background. And 1 year later, after that meeting, I quit Twilio and we started the company.
Wow, that's fascinating how that goes, because I was sort of puzzled with the Twilio connection.
Yeah.
Because I know Twilio and it's a radically different space, but now I understand where the story is coming from. And it's fascinating how things that personally bother you can sometimes be a big inspiration for creating pretty fascinating, remarkable software companies at the end, or technology companies. And maybe that's
I think actually these things work the best, right? Because you are the early user, like you can give feedback and the feedback loop is very fast. Like sometimes when you build like B2B software, getting like fast feedback loop turns out to be impossible or like difficult. So that's why like early, pretty much every feature we build in the first 4 or 5 years, it was because we used it. We sort of had a good intuition about it.
I can totally understand that one. And you're the best tester yourself in this case. So this then became technology primarily. I mean, I know Crisp is known for noise canceling technology. So what is the business model behind it? How do you now bring that to market?
Oh, business model. Yeah. So look, like originally we thought that we will license this technology to like Zooms and Twilios of the world. But look, like we very early we identified that the voice is a critical infrastructure and nobody wants to touch that. So in order to integrate this, you would need to put it in that infrastructure and possibly create issues. I don't know. So those conversations would be slow, right? And that's like very risky for a startup. So that's where we came up with the idea of why don't we incorporate this into a desktop application, right? That would act as a virtual microphone and could like any user can use it. Originally, it was a marketing idea so that we get it like in the hands of like product managers at Zoom and Twilio and others. And they would, we would create FOMO and they would come for the technology. It actually worked exactly like that. But so that desktop application turned out to be so popular, it later became like product of the year on Product Hunt, that like we said, okay, well, maybe that's a bit better. Like just having a product business is a better idea. So that's that. It's a fascinating story, right? Like that's like we didn't know how this is going to go, and so the marketing idea worked. But then, like when the big companies came for the technology, we're like, no, we don't want to give it to you. Like we want to build the product. So yeah.
So where did you end up right now? is still...
Yeah, both. So we have a product which is built on a virtual microphone, virtual speaker technology, which allows it to be hooked into any video or voice calling app, right? Pretty much like hundreds of this. So it gives, like, basically we deliver our technology directly that is like compatible with, out of the box compatible with any calling app. Mm-hmm. And we have, that's the primary business. But we also ended up actually licensing our technology to a lot of companies. So our technology is licensed to, like, embedded into Discord, like Twilio, RingCentral, Vonage, and 50 other companies, actually, including the biggest, like, AI labs out there.
Interesting. Okay, so talking about that, just like you said, you started in an age where AI was, there was a lot of confusion about what is AI, and at the end, it was machine learning. Started creating a product with that. What has been an early decision that you took back then that has actually been fundamental for where you are today?
Yeah, I think like this understanding of like the idea that, look, the world is slow, moving slow. Like, it's hard to have these conversations where, like, we want to embed. I mean, we have a shiny technology, but it's like still hard to get in the hands of these larger companies. And, you know, like, let's create an app and create a buzz around it so that they come back to us. I think it was a very interesting idea that turned out to be fundamentally, like, important for the company's trajectory, right? So, and then, like, when we realized that, okay, maybe we shouldn't be just a software licensing company, but we should be a product company, that was pivotal as well, because, like, now you need to change the entire, like, DNA of the company. Like, building a product, building SDK are very different things, right? So these two have been like big turning points in the early days of the company.
Yeah. So where do you see it going from here? I mean, if you make a guesstimate in terms of, okay, what your company will be most known for? Is it the product, or is it at the end, like, well, maybe it's not known because if you have an SDK, it's actually embedded in something and people don't know you, but...
Yeah, I mean, like, noise cancellation has been our first sort of technology. It's the best in the world, and there's a lot of evidence for it. But we also have other technologies, right? Like, we have in-house technology called accent conversion. So in real time, it converts the speaker's accent to the listener's accent for better comprehension. And I mean, we think it's a fascinating technology that is used in call centers now. So it's like our number one growing technology today. So we are very, very proud of it. We also have voice translation capability inside our same product. So the same product that started as a noise canceling, you know, product has expanded to accent conversion and now real-time voice translation and other things as well. But these are the three, like, pillars for which, like, the same, like, the combining theme is like voice productivity or removing, like, communication barriers.
That is the essence at the end. Exactly. Removing the conversation barriers. Yeah. Because that is possibly the biggest challenge in the world.
It is, like, from communications perspective, for sure, right? I mean, language and accent are both, like, big barriers. And we're very focused on it. Like, we are, like, one of the most important companies in this, especially in the call center space. So we are very well, like, Crisp is a very well-known brand. And there's a lot of demand, though, for the technology we have today.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that brings me to, like, making a couple of connections to the book that I wrote, The Remarkable Effect. The thing of curiosity, right? It starts with noise canceling, that you wanted to have that space for yourself and, not have the noises from the background and so on. That gets you into a product. The product becomes a product people can install on their machines. Then you move towards accent conversion. Then you go to voice translation. At the end, it's all about keeping constant eye on the market and listening and ear on the floor in terms of what customers want. How do you, because you got your own curiosity, but I know that your company has over 300 people employed right now. How do you ensure that the company itself builds that muscle.
Yeah, I think it comes from the founders, right? Like pretty much the company is the extension of the founders, right? Like and the culture that you live by pretty much like extends to the team. Now like I can imagine that I'm a very curious person in the eyes of our team, right? Like so I bring like every day I wake up, the first thing I read is Hacker News. Like that's probably sounds boring, but that's what I do. Like that's the kind of person I am. So I'm very curious on from technology perspective, what's happening in the world. And so like I keep posting these like curious articles and important like engineering articles in our Slack, internal Slack. So I'm pretty sure like people get, curious about like I think that's viral, right? Like when the founder is like that. Probably it's reflective to the rest of the team as well. So that's like
Crazy.
one thing. But like in general, we as a company, we have been very like research oriented, right? So we have in-house
I know
research
it.
team that like the early team were like seven people, all like PhDs in math and physics, except me. But I was like I was like reading research papers and finding actually useful things. And like that was the early like 3 months of the company, right? So I think like this just it's in the DNA of the company to be
Yeah,
curious and
interesting.
like building things in the real-time voice space, right? So that's like
Yeah.
the focus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the if I think it's a crucial muscle to develop, and I like you're doing, it's showing like what what this the gold standard is almost, so that everybody starts to mimic that. I think also when the leadership is doing it, everybody is also seeing, hey, I'm allowed to do this as well, and then it will start to become the thing for yourself. When it comes to being curious, of course, you'll get a lot of ideas in terms of what can be. How do you go about that in terms of making decisions to say yes or no to certain things? Have you got a framework for that in terms of how you go about the bets that you make when it comes to product development?
Yeah, oh my God, I think this is the essence of like entrepreneurship or startups, right? Like how do you prioritize? I think this is at the end of the day, that's the that sort of makes or breaks your company. And so like the framework, I think there are several frameworks we have in play. Like one that I really like is the pain. The understanding the pain of the problem and also so like pretty much like it's the pain framework or like yeah, probably there is a better name for it, but here's the thing. So whenever there is an idea you need to understand how painful it is, right? And that sounds easy or like intuitive, but it's very hard. And to make it easy this is like an insight that I've learned some time ago is that you need to understand what's the alternative. Like, well, you really need to
Yeah,
ask that
true.
question, right? To understand the pain, you need to understand the alternative, right? So, in case of like noise cancellation, the alternative, like if you are in a in an office, the alternative is to go to find a quiet room, right? So it's like probably not that painful. I mean, of course, there are use cases like you are in airport, you're in a cafe. You cannot. There is no alternative. You just need to feel the pain and or if it's a call center, there are like a lot of people speaking next to you, that's probably like just there is no alternative. Or the call center will need to install some like hardware to isolate that. So like in order to understand like what to focus on, like you need to have like a really good intuition about the pain.
Let me make a small interruption here. David just made a remark that cuts straight to how successful founders evaluate opportunities. In order to understand the pain, you need to understand the alternative. Here's why this is important. What's pain for one person isn't pain for another. It's all about context. If the context is off, your product will feel like a nice to have, or even inferior to others. When the context is right, your product will instantly become a must have, critical to the person, and something that they will happily pay a premium for. And that's a trait remarkable software companies master. They acknowledge they cannot please everyone. Then they focus on the essence. And lastly, they offer something valuable and desirable. Want to master these traits as well? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
Right, because there are so many like nice to have ideas that you can build, but like nothing is going to create the urgency, as you were saying, right? Like the urgency and pain go hand to hand, right? So like yeah, exactly. You need to, as a product leader, you need to pay attention to it.
Exactly. Well said. Indeed, it's that alternative, that's a critical part, because that is about context. Because for some people, it might not be a problem at all. Although people think, okay, I've got this solution, everybody can use it. But there needs to be this pain that is not only valuable to solve, but also critical to solve. And these things indeed go hand in hand. In my book, I'm talking about a triangle that's a very important thing there. So I like that. And that brings me to another question, because then you say, okay, we're going to develop these particular technologies. It solves a pain, and it's a pain that is, for certain type of scenarios, is a critical pain, or there's urgency around it. Does it also mean that you have, from a go-to-market perspective, heavily shrunk or niched down in terms of the industries that you're focused on as a company?
Yeah, Tom, like I might sound like very confident when I said that, but it took like years to understand it, right? So like when we started the company, like we had no idea about like marketing, GTM, sales. My background is engineering. My co-founder has like had more experience in entrepreneurship, but still like this is the biggest thing we have built so far. So like we had to learn all of that over time, right? So, like fun example, like fun story. I hope I remember it correctly. But look, in the very beginning, we launched our app, which is a noise canceling app. And we didn't know that, let's say, the pain of background noise is higher in call centers. We didn't know that, right? And then like it was a very horizontal app, like we didn't know even like who is the target audience, like is it gamers? Like it's such a universal problem that it could be like call center agents or gamers, right? I mean, that different from each other. So like I remember that, and like there were certain companies, I don't remember which ones actually, that have started adopting our product. And like I couldn't drive, like, or I couldn't like draw similarities between them. But like one day I got like I was reading a TechCrunch article, and these two companies that were our customers were in that, and I was like, okay, what is this about? It was about remote work. I was like, oh, actually, like, so maybe this is what combines these companies, like this is what was common. And then we started work like focusing on remote work, and it turned out that this is like pre-COVID, right? And this turned out to be like a brilliant idea, because then like COVID started, and like we already had like GTM articles positioning about remote work, so it took off, right? I mean, it was like, if I didn't read that TechCrunch article, we probably wouldn't think about it. So it's just like, yeah, we are not as smart as we appear, like looking back. But that's like the journey of startups, right? A lot of like
very often the whole segmentation game is done wrongly, and it's like, okay, it's companies of this size in this industry and so on, but there are nuances to it, and it has to do with situational cases that make the use case harder or easier. Okay. So you decide to build a product for that. Before we started the call, I asked you which of the 10 traits that I've described in my book resonate most with you. And out of the 10 traits, you picked two that particularly resonated. And one of them was focusing on the essence. And you already said as well in your earlier point about being curiosity, on the curiosity side, you like to build difficult tech. But focusing on the essence, then I think that's a big element of success of products, because you can build a product and you can go the things on the surface so that you can actually get to market the minimum viable product. And other companies choose the other way around and say, hey, now in order for us to survive and to create something that has also differentiated power, We need to do the hard things first. So can you tell me a little bit about your philosophy around focusing on the essence?
Yeah, so look, I think like CRISP is known for its engineering sort of capacity, right? Like we power world's like most like advanced real-time voice applications, right? And we are very proud of it. So, and early on, as I said, like we have been like a research company, like very research oriented. So it is in our DNA to do research and to do like really good engineering, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's like it really defines the company's DNA essentially. And like companies, different companies have different strengths, obviously. Some companies are, I don't know, like their founders are marketers, let's say. They're amazing marketers, so that's their strength, but engineering might not be their strength, right? So our strength is definitely engineering. And be like both founders of the company, me and Artio, like we can do deep dives into very, very low sort of level of details and go up, right? There are certain people that can go deep dive and then it's hard for them to go back. They just get lost there. So I think like it's just like the two founders share this sort of curiosity and the sort of work culture where we can do these deep dives, come back, and that's like, and then like question every detail, right? And I think that this is again another thing that our team appreciates, and I hope that it becomes sort of viral, and they try to mimic that as well. So that's the context. I said like we can relate to the understanding, the essence, right? In combination to like what we are building is really difficult, right? It's not the most difficult thing in the world, but look, if you're talking about real-time voice that should run on device with constrained CPU environment, right? Like small compute and do it like with smallest like latency, that's like, that's a pretty difficult thing. So we are very proud of our work that we produce.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, the moment, well, it starts with the mindset and being willing to do it, because at the end, it also costs money, you know?
Yeah. For the first 2 years, or I don't remember, maybe 3 years, we haven't generated any revenue. So we had to, like, it was a lot of research happening, right?
Yeah.
So it's like when you do like deep tech, that's typical. But like, I mean, there are just very different kind of companies out there.
Exactly. Did you start with funding or did you start bootstrapped?
Yeah, we started like bootstrap, but then like it's a VC-backed company, so we raised several rounds.
Yeah, exactly. All right, but when was the first round that you
raised? I think it was 2018.
Okay, so relatively quickly already.
Yeah,
yep,
yeah.
I understand that. So that mindset from the start to go deep, to focus on the essence, to build something that solves a problem in a fundamental way. The other thing that you talked about that resonated with you from my book was chapter number 2, you know, remarkable software companies offer something valuable and desirable. And I think that is a very important one, particularly the combination of it, because you can solve something, like you say, it has a pain and it's valuable to solve it. But the moment something also becomes desirable, there is a pull.
Yeah.
And I think what I've heard before around the app that you've created, that it started to take off without even doing marketing. How has it helped you, that mindset?
Yeah, I mean, like CRISP has always been about this like magical experience, right? And if you think about it, like 7 years ago, like AI and machine learning wasn't that popular, right? And so we started doing it, especially with audio, it wasn't that popular. So the noise, like doing it for noise cancellation was smart, right? So like the way I would talk about or like present CRISP is I would use a demo. Like I would do a demo on my phone, and people would be like, oh my God, like I want this, right? So like that, it would create a desirability like effect, right? So I remember like when we were graduating from Berkeley Skylab Accelerator, the demo I did was like I had a phone in my hand, and in another hand I had a toy for my kid, which was making a lot of noise. So I played the noise. I did like the recorded and then like played back with Crisp, and everyone was like, oh man, they could relate to it, but also so it's a very relatable technology. It was novelty. So our story is a bit like that. I mean, of course, it cannot be applied to any startup or any company. But same is true. And for like the next 5 years, we were like demoing our technology by just like clapping in a Zoom call, and nobody would hear the clap. It's just easy to communicate that. Same with accent conversion, same with like voice translation. The moment you see that, it's like, wow, this is like the technology works. And I know this problem, right? I can relate to this problem, and it's just like one button. So that's the story of Crisp. I don't think you can replicate it to every kind of problem, but in our case, like, we happen to choose like such problems.
I think you'll be amazed to how many software categories you can apply this if you're open to it. Because at the end, I think the magic word that you use there, that you connect it to something that people can relate to. And a lot of times we create a distance. So you have to apply, we have to solve and to prove. I mean, people always say, you also use the word demo. I hate the word demo, I never use it. I always talk about proof of value. Because that puts you into a mindset whereby you prove the value in a way, in the shortest possible way, so people say, wow. And whether you are creating voice technology or you're creating like really dull software for someone that is in legal or in finance, it doesn't really matter, because all these people have their wow connection to something that is wow in their industry. So I think it's just, like I said, it's a mindset. That's what I describe in my book, because I think that is often missing, where there's brilliant products out there that just don't get that momentum because they missed that angle. So fascinating. I like what you say, that magical experience. I can relate to that. So talking about then the growth of your company, you started 2017. Today, you're around the world. Once you mentioned yourself, you're known for being the most advanced technology provider to solve these type of issues. That doesn't come by itself, of course. What has been, what is the story around scaling? Like, scaling, of course, is always a very hard thing to do in companies, especially when you're still searching for product market fit. But the moment you started to see that product market fit, and then you had to level it up to start creating scale with your company. What's the story about that that you still remember, that you're proud of?
Yeah, I mean, like the first sort of scale that we have encountered was during COVID times, right? Because like people moved home and there was no solution for noise cancellation, and we were the only one in town. So there was a lot of demand for us. Like in 1 year, like we have been recognized as like, you know, four or five like most prestigious awards. You know, there was like a prime time for us, and we scaled the company significantly during that time. And we made several mistakes as well, like maybe like we overhired, like as many companies did during COVID, right? So we had to go like through painful experiences after that, and then like refocus and stuff like that. So I mean, noise cancellation, I mean, every company has different stages of growth, right? Mm-hmm. Like sometimes like this is not like very well understood phenomena, but it's always through stages. Like it's not like linear, like you go and then like it's, you don't scale, I mean, you don't grow anymore, and then like you need to find the next growth. So like the story of Crisp is that like we pretty much like pioneered the noise cancellation technology. And I would even say it like this. So when we started the company, we thought that we are creating technologies for human to human communication, right? We are creating noise cancellation for human to human communication. But then we were not expecting this, but in the last year, actually, a new wave came, right? So which is the human to AI communication, where if you don't remove the background noise and voice coming from the human, AI gets like really messed up, right? And it's something called turn taking as a technology term. The AI stops to properly turn takes, and so the whole conversation breaks down. And like we are a primary supplier of technology now for that use case, which is a new use case for humanity, right? So we process around like a billion minutes per month only for that use case, right? And we power like the biggest companies out there. I think like we are probably like over 80% of the market right now. So like pretty that's impressive. Like, again, like we were not expecting, but the new use case has been created by AI, right? Like, and another like thing that is happening is the accent conversion. It's just, it brings like the largest growth for us right now, because imagine like accent conversion enables call center, like offshore call centers to appear to be like near shore, right? Or onshore. So that creates a lot of economic value and demand for a technology like ours. Yeah, you know, like we because of our this focus on accents and love for like building deep tech, we currently our technology is the best in the market. So it creates this pull from the market and it brings a lot of growth and scale, and it's the best thing for any startup, right? The growth and scale. I mean, it means like you don't sleep well, but that's what you wanted in the first place. So
Well, I mean, the question around that, now that you know what you know, like 8 years on the journey almost, if you would build from scratch again, you know, you know what you know, and today you would start with this idea of that you came up with about 8 years ago, what would you do different when it comes to like that scaling aspect?
Yeah, I mean, like definitely there are certain strategic decisions that we would make earlier than later. So we would probably achieve what we have achieved in 8 years, maybe in 6 years. I don't know. I'm making it up, but you can imagine that, because again, like there's a lot of learning doing wrong things when you don't have the experience. And today, like we are quite experienced in that sense. So, so yeah, I think like I wouldn't necessarily change a lot of things, but like one thing that probably would make sense to change would be like focusing on segmentation and understanding first, like understanding segmentation, and then like focusing on it earlier in the journey.
Yeah,
but you know, not much than that really.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's exactly the reason why it's chapter one in my book. Remarkable software companies acknowledge they cannot please everybody. While you think you can, you shouldn't, because it will make things so much easier. And there's no such thing as, okay, we are not going to touch it, but we say it's about, we're not going to touch it now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
One question around that whole period around COVID, because for a lot of companies, of course, it meant disaster. For you, it meant growth. Has there been a moment in that period whereby you had to sort of pivot or radically go a different direction?
You mean during COVID?
Mm-hmm. Or before that?
During COVID, no. I mean, like the first big pivot was like, hey, let's turn from licensing company to a product company. Like that was a big pivot for us. And then like the second pivot, I wouldn't call it pivot really. I think it's like a natural continuation, but our product, which was only doing like noise cancellation at that time, has been like diverged into two different products, right? Yeah. Architecturally the same, but one's focused on call centers, and then the second is a meeting assistant that anyone in the world can use. I mean, I know, like, I'm not saying a good thing. We need more segmentation there. But eventually it's like for like knowledge workers, like hybrid teams to do their everyday meetings, you know,
for
note taking. Yeah. But so like we have now two products and they're quite different from each other in terms of like segmentation, in terms of GTM. But the value prop is like very similar. It's like voice productivity for both, right?
Yeah, exactly. So have you split your company in two in terms of development groups?
We have actually, like we have two vertical things happening in the company. Like one is managed by myself, the other is like by my co-founder. And we had to, because like we realized that it's just impossible to use like shared teams. It just slows you down. And like we have pretty much like broken down this like into two separate GTM product teams, and that was a good decision to do. Yeah.
But isn't it actually that you have sort of three groups? One group that does platform and another two groups that build on top of that?
No, I mean, so like one group is doing like technology, right? Like SDK. Yeah. Yes, and it's used by to this, and we license this technology to other companies as well, but the same technology is used by these two sort of products that we have.
Exactly. Yeah. Smart. I mean, memories come back from my time at Unit4 where we had similar type of issues. That happens when you start growing in a certain direction. And have you done any acquisitions in this time frame?
We have not. No, like every time, like we were given an opportunity, like we do believe in this like vertical integration. So like maybe like I'm not saying we will not do such acquisitions in the future, but like every time like we feel like, okay, now we can do this better.
That's the whole thing, right? It's a choice.
They're wrong, but yeah, I mean, like we end up with that decision at the end of the day.
Yeah, because specifically in the deep tech space where the technology component is so important, getting something from the outside and having to integrate that, yes, it speeds you up, but it also slows you down, and possibly it can do more harm than you hope for. So looking at the time, in that period where you started the company in 2017, or actually you started thinking about it 2016 already, how has your definition of success changed since then?
Yeah, so like the early on, like the idea was to build technology and then sell this technology to a bigger company, right? Mm-hmm. So that was like the extent of imagination we had. But very early on, that changed. Like, I think like this just like changed very quickly. And we realized like how much we love building company, right? And the company is the team, is the culture, the technology, your product, and everything.
Yeah.
So the appetite has started growing and growing over time. And I, like we, I think we always thought that we have a shot to build something like really big and lasting, and that still like we can see that. And I think like until that's the case, probably like we will be highly focused on the bigger idea.
Exactly. Yeah. So initially you wanted to we're building for an exit, and now it's like, okay, no way it's going to be an exit. We got to do this journey.
I'm not saying it's impossible, right? I think great exits at the right time are probably like the best decision you can make, but I'm not really thinking about it. Like there is too much to think about than that.
But the greatest exits always come from the companies that have been had the greatest focus on customer value, creating something that's valuable and desirable, because that's at the end what creates the growth for your business, and that makes it valuable to others as well. Okay, last question. Out of the lessons that you learned, entrepreneurial lessons, I mean, first of all, Twilio is being the head of product there for security, right?
Security, yes.
And then later on, a couple of other companies, and now, of course, since 17, Crisp. What would be a do and what would be a don't that you'd like to share with entrepreneurs that aspire a similar direction that you've taken?
Look, like one thing I keep doing or keep saying to my friends, and like actually I have a small VC firm where I invest from, so like to these founders, is that look, if you like basically like keep building and they will come, right? There is that saying. So like if you focus on an idea and you spend all your energy on it, like day and night with your team over a certain period of time, I think that, and I think this is the essence of startups and the miracle behind startups, that if you do that, you know, you get noticed. And it starts to accumulate over time. Okay, so you be patient, right? Be patient, focus on your work, and after a certain period of time, there is going to be, I mean, not always, of course, it depends how well you're doing your work and what is it that you're doing? Of course, those things matter and timing matters, but
Sure.
essentially, if intuitively is the right thing to do, like, and you feel like people need that, some good things are going to happen to you. People are going to notice, and it's going to work out in ways that you would never imagine, right? So,
Sure.
and I've seen that like in many companies, it's fascinating. It's
Exactly.
like, I think it's the magic of startups, right?
I like how you phrased it. Yeah, well, last question then. Where can people go to find out more about Crisp or to say hi to you?
Yeah, crisp.ai, Crisp with K, is the place to go. And professionally, I'm more active on LinkedIn. So
I see that, yeah.
I have a newsletter on voice AI. It's pretty popular, actually. Like every week, I create a digest of what happened in voice AI and send over email. Sometimes I do like podcast as well. So,
yeah,
but it's all available on LinkedIn.
Perfect. Well, I'll follow you already there, and I see it coming through my feed. Thanks for the openness that you've put across here. Thanks for sharing the wisdom, the little secrets about what made your company so powerful and so well known in the market. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Well, thanks so much, and thanks for like really good questions.
It was a pleasure. And this wraps up my conversation with David Bagdasarjan, CEO of Crisp AI. If you got value from this episode, please share it with other SaaS founders who need to hear this as well. And if you got 10 seconds, a quick rating or review on Apple Podcasts will help more people to find these conversations. Thank you for listening to the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. If you want more insights like this, subscribe to my daily email, Espresso with Ton. It's a 2-minute shot of clarity for SaaS founders who want to create pull, not push. You can sign up, along with getting my book, at valueinspiration.com. See you in the next episode.